There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. Also, it looks like Hurricane Sally Eve. Got this note from Alabama Power. Said as of 1 o'clock, so just about 7 minutes ago, 3,350 customers in our area are without power. Their crews are working in areas where it's safe to do so. Stay away from down power lines. Of course, we talked to Mark Ingram from Baldwin EMC last hour, saying the same thing, that they crews are out there now, but they're going to have to pull them back at a certain point, obviously, for safety. So, but right now, 3,350 Alabama Power customers without power. I have a feeling that number will go up. I'm going to ask that question of the man that everybody wants to hear from, our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, who's checking in now. Dr. Bill, thanks for your time.
Yeah, Sean, kind of a tough day, and we got a big one tomorrow because that storm will be making landfall in our area.
And it's been affecting us, I guess, was it yesterday that we were getting the first effects of Sally?
Yeah, exactly. We had a couple of feeder bands that moved onshore, but those were far away from the center of the storm, which right now is, we'll call it east of the mouth of the Mississippi River. So it's still got a ways to go, and it's moving very slow at only 2 miles per hour.
This is, I think last hour I said lollygagging on that storm, and at 2 miles an hour, it's obviously part of this rain component that I want to get to, but I got a lot of questions here from listeners, and they can chime in as well on the text line at 343-0106. We cover big area from Pascagoula to Pensacola up to Jackson, Alabama, but let's talk Mobile and Baldwin counties, because I'm getting people in both counties sending me pictures of their yards and the before and after. Here's what it normally looks like. Here's what the water looks like. And I was getting those yesterday, too, that they had increased water levels where they were, and now they're higher today. What does somebody expect compared, like, are they seeing the highest of the surge today, or will that be tomorrow or overnight and kind of coinciding with the high tide? What's the scenario there, and is it higher expected for people in Mobile County than Baldwin County or vice versa? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, it looks like the landfall is going to occur either on the southeastern portion of Mobile County, or will actually come into the bay. And what that means is that the highest storm surge will be over in Baldwin County, and as opposed to Mobile County, since it'll be on the eastern side of the storm center. So areas in Baldwin County along the waterfront there, when the beaches, will see most likely 7 to 9 feet, possibly 10 feet, and a little bit less to the western side of the storm center. And the highest tide over there will basically occur before the landfall as water is pushed up into that area. But definitely it looks like the higher surge will be on the in the Baldwin County if the storm maintains this path now toward either southeastern Mobile County or coming right up Mobile Bay.
So that is somewhat of a change from what we were talking about 2 days ago. So it's more... The surge is going to be higher for Baldwin County now than Mobile County, but that doesn't get Mobile County out of the woods.
No, not at all. And, of course, all around the bay, if it moves up the eastern side of Mobile County or up the bay, it's going to be pushing water into the bay. So we could see certainly 7 to 9 feet for Mobile Bay.
And I'm thinking, I guess on that tract, if it comes straight up the bay, it's already bad enough for the piers and wharves on the eastern shore, but it sounds like it could be a lot of lumber people are going to be buying a lot of lumber here in the next couple of weeks, because I remember after...
Especially in the eastern shore, because look at either one of those situations, the eastern side of the storm and around the eye would be on the greatest effect would be on the eastern shore of the bay.
Questions coming in. Terry asks us, when will Mobile start feeling hurricane force winds? I guess he means the city versus the county. Or walk us through that. What's that timeline? When do we start feeling it, even before landfall? When is that?
Now, right now, the highest winds are at 80 miles an hour, so it's dropped a little bit, and it may even drop down to 75 or a minimal hurricane at landfall. This is quite a bit of time before that occurs, and it looks like now that landfall will not take place until around daybreak tomorrow, and then the storm center will gradually move north. So the center may actually reach the Mobile area or the northern portion of the bay around mid-morning, and we're starting around daybreak down on the coast and then gradually moving on up to the north. As for hurricane force gusts that we can expect, we're not going to see that this afternoon. We'll look at gusts up to around 50 miles per hour, but that will increase through the evening hours, so that after midnight, that's when we may see some gusts get up around 70 to 75 miles per hour. And most of the time from midnight on through the morning, it'll be winds of 50 to 60 miles per hour out of the northeast, with occasional gusts, perhaps up to 75. And then tomorrow, we'll see that chance, of course, for winds of 75 miles an hour in gusts through the morning. And then in the afternoon, the wind will become northwesterly, and generally running 45 to 55, with gusts occasionally up to 70 miles an hour. It won't be until really tomorrow evening when we feel we start to feel that decrease in wind, so that the gusts are down to around 50, which will seem a little more pleasant than reaching up to 70, 75.
Everything's relative, I guess, as you navigate this. And you talk about the rainfall totals here, and some areas will, I mean, as we've seen before with bands or, you know, training through an area, will get considerably more. But all of us expect double digits, correct?
That's right. We haven't really seen the heaviest rain yet, because it's pretty much wrapped around the eye, and that's just offshore, but it'll be moving on into our area through the evening hours and overnight, and we'll stay within those really heavy bands around the center of the storm all through the night and through a good portion of tomorrow. And so totals of 8 to 12 inches of rain are likely in our area. Possible some locations could see up to 20 inches or maybe a little more than that, but I would say certainly in that range of 8 to 12 inches.
All right, and with that, the compounding effect we talked about last hour, and this is something I think that you could talk about rainfall totals, and then you could talk about storm surge, but there are plenty of places. I know you want to also talk about the main rivers, but our local, what I'll call dead-end rivers or bayous around here, they get double trouble, right, with rain and surge.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we're looking at, in some situations, more than 3 inches of rain per hour. And if the ground is already saturated, that's all runoff. And that means flash flooding. It also means that the creeks and streams in the area will be flooded. And as the storm moves inland, it's going to spread heavy rain into the river systems in southwest and eventually up into central Alabama. Of course, that all ends up coming down to the coast over the next few days.
Yeah, I'm looking at those gauges, Dr. Bill, and for example, the Mobile River Berry Steam Plant already predicted to go to 10.3 feet, and y'all, it's not the craziness we had this spring with 16 at Berry, but that's a heck of a river. It's like a wintertime spring river, and they're calling for that, you know, rises on the Tom Bigby and Alabama. So that's going to be something we're going to deal with. Well, that's going to be a legacy of Sally, I guess. We'll deal with that for a week.
Yeah, that's right. Long after Sally has ended up out in the Atlantic, yeah, we'll be still looking at the conditions with the river systems coming down to the coast in Mississippi and Alabama and northwest Florida. So this is just a slow system. It's going to take its time coming in overnight and then take its time moving up through southwest Alabama. In fact, all day tomorrow, it will be moving from Mobile through the interior areas of southwest Alabama. It'll take the whole day to do that before it ever gets out into central Alabama, which will, of course, occur very late tomorrow and then on into Thursday. And so it's going to leave quite a track in the way of heavy rainfall.
Now, the chronic effects, the rainfall and the wind, acute effects, I guess the wind as well, but I'm thinking about tornadoes. Is there anything that you can see already that says there's a proclivity more than normal for tornadoes or less? Or is there anything, the way to forecast that?
Yeah, I don't see that right now.
Good.
That we'll see a major outbreak of tornadoes such as occurred in Hurricane Ivan, which was a very large hurricane. But I don't quite see that, but there's that possibility that in some of these intense cells, thunderstorm cells that are moving around in the feeder bands and then around near the center of the storm, where we will get some rotation in the form of tornadoes. They generally do not last very long. They move rather rapidly, and they form, come down, and then they're out, and the damage is not a long track. And that's a tendency for tornadoes and hurricanes to have very small, short tracks.
All right. Well, that's hopefully it stays that we don't have much of that from.
Yeah, Saturday. We don't need that for sure. We have enough to contend with in the rain, the storm surge, and of course the wind. When we talk about winds of 60 to 70, 75 miles an hour in gusts, we're going to see a lot of tree damage, mainly in limbs. And then some trees, we're going to find the soil has become very saturated, very loose, and some trees may topple over. That's going to be the problem. And, of course, if the tree falls on a home, then that's another thing. Most of it will be tree damage and maybe some billboards here and there.
Well, then we'll have Shannara will be all over the state. Oh, he already is. Dr. Bill, we're going to get more updates from you, but once again, to recap here on this update, we should start feeling the effects of, let's say, what did you say, 45 to 60 mile per hour winds by when?
That's going to be on through the evening hours and
after dark.
And then after midnight, then we'll start to see the peak gusts begin, getting up perhaps to 70, 75 miles an hour. After midnight and on through the morning hours, there's the only real difference here is going to be a northeast wind through most of the night and then gradually becoming northwesterly late morning and through the afternoon. And then by late afternoon tomorrow, the wind should start to gradually slow down a bit, but still remain rather brisk all the way through tomorrow night. And then, of course, Thursday, things will definitely improve. The winds will die down. It will seem like a dead calm on Thursday with winds of 10 to 15 miles an hour out of the northwest.
Everything is relative. And as always, Dr. Bill, I appreciate these updates. It means so much to so many of us to get the facts from you. So we will be talking more throughout today and this evening and, of course, tomorrow morning. So we'll check back with you real soon. There he is, staff meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams, checking in. And also when he speaks of the trees, and, you know, this is something that is a big part of dealing with this is when trees come down, how they come down, and where they come down. And a friend of the radio station, a friend of mine, a friend, you listen to him on Bill Finch, it's like listening to the captain and to Neil when those two are together. Chris Francis from Chris Francis Tree Care is jumping on with us right now. Now, last time, Chris, we talked, you said, y'all better be getting stuff done now, not not wait until a storm's coming.
It's a little late now, so, you know, I guess really the thing to talk about is what happens, you know, after the inevitable happens, what to do, because a lot of people have never been in that situation. They don't know what to do, and there's a lot of anxiety and people are trying to figure it out. So I wanted to cover a few kind of key points so that people can kind of figure that out and know what to do, know what to expect.
Well, what, kind of give me, I mean, y'all, you're listening to an arborist here. You're this guy that knows trees better than trees know themselves. So kind of give us, yeah, man, give us your tips. In your opinion, what do we need to know right now?
All right, so if a tree fails during the storm, there's not much you can do about it. There's not much that anybody's going to be able to do about it. They're not coming out in the middle of the storm. You're going to have to deal with it. So don't panic. Get out of the way. You know, you may have a tree, you know, say through the house, through the garage, on your fence, whatever it is. You're just going to have to wait until after the storm. Now, you can go ahead and call somebody if you have cell phone service or if you have a way. Like you could get on our website, you could, you know, type in your information, we could get in touch. But
it's worth getting in line, then. It is worth, if you see that, go ahead and get in line.
Yeah, go ahead and get in line. Okay. Yep. I will say that trees on fences, trees laying down in the yard, they're going to be lower priority. It's more, you know, imagine a tree comes through your house, or even if it doesn't come all the way through, it's hit your roof, and now you have a hole. Well, the longer that tree stays on your house, the more damage it is going to occur through the rest of the house.
Oh, yeah.
And so then you wind up having mold, mildew, you wind up having electrical problems, you wind up with all kind of problems. And so the insurance companies, for everyone that I've ever met, they want the tree off the house as soon as possible. And again, you have to wait until the storm is out to where the conditions are safe, to where somebody could come out and do that. Just like the power guy was saying, you know, they're not going to come out in the middle of the hurricane and, right, you know, fix your power. So once it's over, but there's going to be people knocking on your door. There's going to be people leaving things, you know, on your doorstep and sending things out, putting things in your mailbox. You know, there's guys coming in all over the place. But what you want to look for is a professional company. So you want to find that professional company. You want to find somebody that is licensed, that is properly insured for tree work, that has workers' comp. And that's probably the main thing, is that you get a professional that has insurance and workers' comp. That way, if something happens on your property, then you're covered. So if you get somebody that doesn't have the right insurance or their workers aren't covered and something happens, then they're looking for deep pockets. And I'm not an attorney, but you know, from my experience, they're going to go after the homeowner, the property owner, because the guy that they're working for doesn't have any money, so they're going to go after the property owner. So, you know, it doesn't really pay to hire somebody and try to save some money, especially, let's say, most of these cases are going to be insurance claims. And not to say that we don't care, but why do you care if it costs a little bit more to get something done professional if the insurance company is paying that tab?
Right.
And don't try to do it yourself either. There's a lot of people try to do it themselves. They'll die. Chainsaws, you got heights, you got, pressures on trees. And a lot of people die every year trying to do their own tree work, especially after a storm. That's when most of the accidents happen. So don't do that.
Yeah, well, you're talking about a couple of things, fighting normal human emotion. It's good to hear you say it, because we have to put this in the logic versus the emotion, because the emotion is, right, we've all been there, I want that tree off the house, right? I've got that chainsaw. I want that tree off the house as soon as possible. And the thing is, I'm going to take the first person, if I'm not going to do it myself and do that, which could be very dangerous, as you point out, I'm going to have the first person that comes along do it, because that emotion would have you want to do that, not stop and think about the things you just laid out. So, I mean, it's good that you're detailing those.
Well, and a lot of times when a tree is resting on a structure, then a crane would need to be involved, and the crane is going to lift off of the structure. So if somebody's trying to take a tree, say off of your house, and maybe, you know, try to hook it to a truck or, you know, rig it some weird way or something. I'm not saying it's not possible, but in most of those instances, they could actually cause more damage to the house, maybe even, you know, hurt somebody. And so, you know, for most instances, we're going to get a crane involved to where we pick the tree up off the house. It's rigged properly. We get it safe, you know, situation. Then you can get a tarp, temporary roof put on your house. And realistically, so I get every time there's a major storm, there's a certain crowd of people that say, you know what, we're waiting on the adjuster. We're waiting until the adjuster comes and looks. Well, the adjusters are slammed. The adjusters are so busy, they're not going to get there. So if you're able to get the adjuster on the phone, what they're going to tell you is, get the tree off the house, put a tarp on. I'll be there in like 2 weeks. You know, they're not going to get there anytime soon. You really don't want to be sitting there with the tree still in your house. If you find a good professional company, they're going to work with the insurance company. If for whatever reason the insurance company says, hey, you know what, that bill was too high, you know, we're not paying for this, or we're not paying a percentage of this, it's not typically coming out of the client's pocket. That's coming out of the tree service and the insurance company negotiating that. And so, you know, if you have an active policy, get a professional, get it done right, and then, you know, you don't really have to worry about it, and then it's out of your hands. The tree service is going to deal directly with the insurance company. Kind of one last thing with that, it's pretty important. Don't pay somebody up front. Every year somebody gets scammed because they give somebody some money up front. They may even start the work, and then they leave, and they don't come back. And some of them may have good intentions, and they just realize, hey, we're over our head, you know, and then we'll get back there, or we'll get a plan, and then they never do. But I think a lot of them intend to scam people out of their money. They take the money, and then they run. And that's a really bad place to be. There's no point in giving somebody money up front, you know, for that, especially when most of these are going to be insurance claims anyway. Just, you know, get a reputable service, and then, you know, trust your gut, you know, trust your feeling, you know, on that.
All right. So the next time we talk, well, I think next time we talk, we'll talk forensically about what it looks around, what it looks like around Baldwin County and Mobile County.
Yeah. So people say all the time, oh, I bet you really hope and you pray for these. I don't.
No, you're happy.
We have a regular schedule. We have a backlog. This throws everything, you know, up in the air. I don't hope for these kind of things. I really don't. But we're prepared for them.
Yeah.
And
you,
so, you know, we're prepared to activate our emergency plan, to put our people into place, to bring in other people, to make sure that we're able to handle the workload, that have the iron on site, that we can actually, you know, make these things happen.
Very good. Chris, as always, I appreciate your time, and we will talk again.
Sure thing.
All right.
Great day.
Hey, you too. Chris Francis, checking in. A wealth of information. I thought I knew the trees in my yard. He came to my house, and by the time he was finished, I said, well, I learned a whole bunch. Yeah, he digs those trees, for sure. He likes them a lot. And God knows what he's doing, for sure. All right, we're going to run to the break here. So this discussion came up. I had a couple. Are these a little bit comedic discussions? Yes, they are, to alleviate a little bit of stress out there. The one I had for folks lucky enough to have piece of property on the water was the old debate whether piers or wharves are better built low or high. How do they do after a storm? You know, in other words, does it build them low so the water comes up and the wave action is above it and doesn't destroy it? Or do you build it, can you build it high enough to keep it out of the wave action? Because that's one. And then another one, other than what are y'all cooking? Because I'm thinking if I can get home in time and get the ingredients, I got a hankering to cook some gumbo for some reason in a big way. But those are a couple of things on my list. But the other one here is, as you get ready for the storm, is there anything you do at your house differently than maybe other folks would do? Is there any kind of different angle you have on that? And, oh, yeah, also, somebody asked me can you stand up if the winds are 60 miles an hour? You can. Depends on how big you are, right, if you can stand up. If the winds are, I think the wind speed, when I looked at this years ago, I think the wind speed, 120 for an adult weighing like 175 pounds or something like that, when winds are, I think it was 120, there's no way to even lean into it. You know that thing, if you've ever stepped, not that it's smart to do, but if you've ever stood outside during hurricane force winds, you can try to lean into it so you can stand up. At 120, you can't lean far enough forward. Don't go test that theory. If you're a light thing, it might just be 55 miles an hour, might blow you across the yard, so stay inside. All right, news is next. Ed, State Senator Chris Elliott joins us in just a second.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Eyes on Sally, Hurricane Sally. Looks like official landfall by tomorrow morning, says our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams, starting to feel effects. Well, we've been feeling effects since yesterday to some degree, but picking up as we get towards sunset and overnight tonight is when we'll get the highest winds from Sally. More on that coming up in just a this segment of the show brought to you by Harry's. And glad to welcome the crew from Harry's back. Been a part of the show for a long, long time. I've been shaving with Harry's for like 7 years. Been a fan of that shave. And I've told you in the past, I love the convenience of having the blade show up the house so I don't have to remember. I love the fact that the shave is fantastic. That's a keystone to this whole thing. But then that $2 a blade, the fiscal conservative in me jumps for joy on that one. And now Harry's has come out with their sharpest blades ever. And unlike some other razor companies, they're not charging you more for their product improvements. The blade's still just $2 each. Plus, you can find Harry's new sharper blades at the big box, drug, and grocery stores near you. But if you like to shop online, and let me add, support this show, you can get your trial set for just $3 when you use the code SEANS at checkout at harrys.com. Now, it's the same great story of Harry's I've told you for a long time, but even better now with these sharper blades. The new blades are so sharp that in a study with guys shaving 4 times a week, the guys reported that with Harry's new blades, their 8th shave was as smooth as their first. Pretty strong. Harry's is available wherever you shop, so you can get Harry's sharpest blades ever in your big box stores, drug stores, grocery stores. Just head on over to the grooming aisle. And if you like to shop online and support this show, Harry's has a great offer for y'all. New customers get $5 off a Harry's trial set when you use my code SEANS. So it's like my old code I had forever, SEAN. They just put the S on it to add an extra letter, like my last name, SEANS at harrys.com. That includes a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, travel cover, all for just $3, y'all, plus free shipping. Don't forget to use my code SEANS at checkout and give Harry's sharper blades a try. Thank you. So many pictures coming in here from all over Mobile and Baldwin County of where the water is. I love Milton's because he has pictures like what his yard looks like normally on Fowl River and what it looks like now. That's a good gauge. Lisa in Robertsdale said the bridge at Lillian going to Pensacola is closed. Let's see. Doug sent me pictures there on County Road 1 where the water's up, and that goes to the discussion of whether you build your pier or wharf low or high. It's a conversation we're having over on Twitter. And some more questions on... Bill, good point. Bill, solid point. Bill on the text line says, in I guess reaction to what Chris Francis said, he said, if you have a dangerous tree near your house, stay away from that part of your house during the storm. Bill, I appreciate that. That's like, you know, hey, doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, well, don't do this. All right, as we're checking in around our area, I want to check in on South Baldwin and do that with State Senator Chris Elliott. And plus, we got some Montgomery stuff to talk about as well. Thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
Yeah, looking at the south end of Baldwin, looks like it could be taking it as much as the south end of Mobile County from Sally.
Well, it really is, and I spent most of the morning down in the Josephine community, actually where my dad lives, and they've got some serious coastal flooding going on right now. Several roads impassable. You know, that's kind of the Pirate Cove area down there, just back north of Orange Beach on Perdido Bay, and some serious coastal flooding. What concerns me most, though, Sean, is the rain that we haven't gotten yet and the riverine flooding that is going to occur in the Fish River, Styx River, and Perdido River basins.
I'm glad you said
that. We are going to see historical flooding there.
I'm glad you said that. And it's this double thing. You know, we think about those rivers you named it, and I'm going to focus for a second just on Fish River, and you know, gigantic spring rains we've had in the past that had massive flooding effects on Fish River. But if you have even less than, I think it was like 22 inches of rain back then or something to that effect, but let's say you have 10 or 15, but you now have storm surge stopping up the drainage, it's going to be get bad real fast for people in that Magnolia River and Fish River and all over the place.
Well, you're exactly right, and you've hit several nails on the head that are worth kind of reiterating there. One, the storm surge is coming in the mouth of the river, if you will, and is holding back an awful lot of the water that would otherwise be exiting the river. Plus, you have a historic rain event, 20-plus inches. Again, this is similar to what we or in excess of what we experienced back in 2014 and also during Hurricane Danny. Both of those events were more rain events than they were wind events. And, you know, the Baldwin EMA and the sheriff are talking right now, I think, in a press conference, talking about evacuating those areas, those low-lying riverine areas around Fish Sticks and Perdido River. Folks really need to be thinking that they are going to see the same type or in excess of the flooding they saw in 2014 and back in the late 90s with Danny.
And maybe the, you know, I was talking about this yesterday with your predecessor had texted me and said, you know, you're making some assumptions that everybody knows these things, but there's always new people moving to Baldwin County. So that's a good point that even if y'all know, if there's new neighbors down the street or something like that, you may want to holler at them and say, hey, this is what can happen.
Well, absolutely. And I was amazed even in 2014 when I was just coming on the commission, the number of folks that had lost their vehicles, lost an all, you know, their boat, all kinds of things, because the water rose so quickly in those river basins and just completely, you know, drowned their car and boat and everything else. Go ahead and get those things out of the way. We're blessed that this is not a huge wind event. It's a significant one, but it's not nearly as windy as some other hurricanes have been. But the flooding is going to be the issue. It is not over yet, and those folks really need to seek higher ground immediately.
What does it mean when, because we've had, well, multiple states of emergency that the governor has called, but this one specifically for Sally. What does it mean for citizens? I mean, does it change something for loans or disaster relief, or what is it green light for us?
It can help with funding from the feds and a presidential disaster declaration. It essentially allows local governments, municipalities, and the county commission to be reimbursed for some expenses that they may incur in responding to or recovering from an event like this. I know in 2014, we received an awful lot of federal money to assist the county commission in repairing almost $30 million worth of culverts that had blown out all around the county.
Say
you can
what?
Imagine that amount of rain washed those culverts completely out, and then many of those roads were impassable for quite some time.
I remember the culvert issue, but it was $30 million in culvert?
Well, it was, and you start thinking about, you know, what was a round pipe under a road that had to be up-designed for rain events like that, like mm-hmm. this, rather, and that is some good news, is that these culverts have been redesigned to handle a lot more water than they did in the past. But oftentimes those can be very expensive as you put in box culverts that have to be formed concrete and close the road down for a while.
Yeah, I'm not just taking a track hoe and digging it out and putting a culvert in, throwing some riprap on the front of it and going.
No, these were significant box culvert replacements.
Well, dang.
Getting the report in place.
That's the extent of my knowledge right there. It's just doing it that way. Okay, I want to, and we'll circle back around to this and dealing with the storm for the next 12 to 20 hours. But this came up on the show, I think it was yesterday. I was talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News. And this discussion we got into of landmark districts, and I'm really interested in this. I had heard a little bit about it. He and I had a little bit of a discussion. I know you've been obviously paying attention to this. This is something that'll be on the November 3rd ballot for some voters.
It will be, and there's a lot of confusion surrounding what is and is not a landmark district. And I actually offered an amendment to Representative Joe Faust's bill, House Bill 203, that allowed for the Barnwell district, and there was some confusion, and I heard what Todd was saying to you the other day, and I think it might need some clarification about what was and or is and is not a landmark district. A landmark district essentially, and it's an odd legal term, but the power that it has is to preclude legislative annexation of property. It just simply says the legislature, right? Me and the rest of the Baldwin County legislative delegation can't go tell a bunch of landowners that they didn't used to live in the city of whatever, but now that they do, we've changed it on them. And that's about it. Now, a lot of people may not know that your legislature has the ability to do that, that they can say, hey, Sean, your farm is now in the city or whatever. You know, you might think that would be something that, you know, good private property rights state like Alabama doesn't allow, but it does.
It does.
And it does currently. And these folks don't want that to happen. Interestingly enough, that is how most land gets annexed into a city. Just go to the legislature and say, hey, annex in my land. That's the key part. Typically, it's the my land part. And typically, it's a developer who's about to develop a subdivision, and he says, okay, I want these 300 lots to be in, take it, the city of Fairhope, for instance, when we sell the lot. And he'll come to the legislature and ask for that. And, of course, we talk to the city, and if the city wants it, then that's the way municipalities grow in the state of Alabama. Well, these particular folks are unhappy with the city of Fairhope. They are unhappy with the annexations that have, you know, the threat of annexation. They're unhappy, I will tell you this, with police jurisdictions, extraterritorial jurisdictions, and some of those things. And they don't want to be part of the city of Fairhope now or forever. So much so that they're trying to amend the Constitution of 1901 by referendum to say, we're Barnwell and we're not Fairhope and we never will be.
And to upend that, is it correct? It has to be unanimous vote of the property owners in that landmark district if they ever did become part of the city?
No, so that's part of the confusion, I think. What is required in order to pass the landmark district, it's voted on countywide, so it'll be a countywide referendum. There will be two, one for Rosington, which is around the Loxley and Robertsdale area, if you will, and then this one in Barnwell. Now, if the majority of the voters in the county, both within and without cities, vote to approve this referendum, then the Constitution will be amended to reflect the existence of these landmark districts. Now, it's important to note that the landmark district is not a legal entity, shall not be able to tax or zone, have any police powers, can adopt ordinances or rules or any other power associated with a legal entity. And the bill also that we amended made sure that was true also for any other landmark districts in the county. For instance, the one in Stockton has already been passed, but we've amended that one as well by this bill.
So Todd's understanding that it gave them that authority. It does not get, like, they couldn't tax and pay for public safety or something like that.
Correct. And it's also not an incorporation.
Okay.
And if somebody in the landmark district that is contiguous with the city decides to annex in, they can still do that. All this does is preclude legislative annexation of property within the landmark district.
This is, okay, and we'll probably have to talk about this several times between now and November 3rd, because I think there's very few people that understand this.
Well, it's a little complicated, and some folks are wondering why is this necessary? Why would we want to do this? And again, I think that it's the people in this general area being very frustrated with some of the policies of the surrounding city. And again, we've seen that, you know, in other places. They want to protect the heritage, if you will, of their area, and say, no, we're a thing. We may not be a big bad city, but we still are here, and we don't want that to be gobbled up.
Well, if you said
about the growth, and they want to be able to control things on their own, or using the county commission as opposed to folks that tax, police, and regulate them, but that they can't vote for.
And that initial scenario that you laid out, if that, you know, I know that's a, you know, a very specific thing, but if somebody has a farm that all of a sudden gets annexed into the city they didn't want, I mean, that hits me right in the solar plexus, Chris. I don't want that to happen.
Any good conservative that values private property rights, that should be something that bothers them tremendously. And I will tell you, it's not uncommon for a mayor or a council to come to their legislature and say, we would like to annex this area in. And, you know, my answer is, well, go get all those people to tell you that they want to, and we can talk. But I am very hesitant to ever do that. Matter of fact, I told the mayor the other day, I said, that's a lot like bathing a cat. I mean, if they wanted to be in your town or city, they'd already be there. Forcing them in is probably not going to go well.
Well said. All right, we'll pick this conversation back up going forward. And once again, the situation there in Baldwin County, just like Mobile County, deteriorating as we move forward. And just folks understand, I think, what Senator Elliott said earlier. You know, this could be flooding like we've seen, you know, and you talked about Fish River and Six River and Perdita River. I mean, these are areas that have flooded and can flood in a very big way.
And they're likely to do it again or a bigger way. So those folks really need to go ahead and seek higher ground now.
Well said. Thank you for your time, and we'll be talking again soon.
Thank you.
All right, there he is, State Senator Chris Elliott, joining us as we get ready to wrap up this show, but doesn't mean we're wrapping up our coverage. Be back to wrap it up here in a second. Feinbaum comes on, but you'll get updates from Dr. Bill and expanded discussions as we need them throughout the afternoon, evening, and overnight. And, of course, leading into Mobile Mornings tomorrow morning with Dan and Dalton.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 156, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Dan Brennan had just walked up here to discuss how strong of a wind you can stand in or lean into. I can tell you this, it depends on your weight and all that. You know, 70 miles an hour if you're standing straight up. People say you can go much more if you lean into it. But after 120, you can't even lean into it. I would point out, though, junk can travel at a lot lower speed of wind. Like trampolines that we've seen or whatever the junk is. This is a segue into telling you, probably not today or tomorrow the best time to get an appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK, but that's my buddy Trey. He lives here. He's going to be here after the storm as well. Maybe you got some extra junk from your neighbor's yard that ends up in your yard. Whatever it is. It could be junk inside your house, outside your house, at a office. It could be a house you're getting ready to sell. It could be a storage unit. You're tired of paying on for all that junk in there. Get 1-800-GOT-JUNK to get rid of it. Real easy. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and make that appointment a day and a time window. They'll show up. They'll say, okay, it's going to cost this much. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done right then. It's really, I mean, I've used them here with the business, use them at the house, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, and they've been doing it for 12 years. A buddy of mine, personal friend of mine, Trey, give him a call and do it. 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And batten down, at least turn the trampoline upside down before the winds get bad. I don't want it in my yard. Oh, man, so many pictures coming in, and so many, I got this, too. Dalton was sending me, this is from down in South Baldwin. Oddly, we're just talking about the area down around Josephine with State Senator Chris Elliott. This says, update as of 1:10 from the Orange Beach Police Department, water over the road at Magnolia Circle, Ornicore Avenue, I think it is, Pine Road at Magnolia Drive, Azalea Street at Josephine Drive, west of the boat launch and Spinnaker Way. Wolf Bay Road's impassable. Bayou Drive is impassable. Marina Road is impassable. County Road 95 near Pirates Cove is impassable. I was getting some pictures from our buddy Jim Cox as well with water over the docks down at Orange Beach, considerably higher than it was yesterday. All right, I'll be seeing those storm surges increase as we go on into the night and overnight. We'll be giving you updates as needed through the Paul Feinbaum Show, through this evening into tomorrow morning right here at FM Talk 106.5. We're not going to leave you hanging on this. We'll give you information that you need from the guy that gets it right, Dr. Bill Williams. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next.